This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorwath. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, we've heard a lot recently, haven't we, here on Environment Matters and elsewhere, about making our food more sustainable, resilient and fair. Well, it turns out that St Albans has got a very long history of doing just this. Local nurseries producing plants, including food plants, varieties of plants that were very local, and efforts to help even the poorest person have access to fresh food. And it's all evidenced in an exhibition at the St Albans Museum and Art Gallery, in an exhibition called Growing City. I spoke to museum curator Sarah Keeling and Maureen Jones, one of the key volunteer researchers behind the exhibition. Sarah started by explaining where the idea for the exhibition had come from.
This exhibition is actually born out of a previous exhibition, I guess. Way back in 2018, when we first opened the museum, we had an exhibition called First Impressions, talking about the printing industry in St Albans. And one of the really interesting stories there was Frederick Sander, who grew orchids in St Albans, but who was such a perfectionist that when he came to want to write a catalogue of his orchids called the Reichenbachia, he got his own printing press, his own artist, and he did everything himself. And so he was part of our printing exhibition. And that exhibition was researched by our volunteers. And Maureen was the volunteer who researched Sander and his printing press. And that set her off on a really interesting quest to find out how many other gardening businesses there were, horticultural businesses, in St Albans. And I'll hand over to you to tell the next bit of the story, Maureen.
Yes, researching Sander's was incredible. I had studied horticulture and I went to Oaklands, and I'd heard about a couple of other growers in St Albans, but I hadn't come across Frederick Sander, and I couldn't believe that I didn't know about him.
Just tell us a little bit about him, just basically what...
Okay, he was a German national, and he came to England. He loved all things English, and he first decided that he would come to St Albans and buy a nursery, and he bought a nursery in George Street. And it was a fairly general nursery, but as he was going along, he got more and more interested in orchids until it became a full-blown obsession. And he then wanted a bigger nursery, and he moved down to the camp, and he had acres of greenhouses there. He also sent orchid hunters all over the world, bringing back new and never seen orchids back to St Albans. He even had his own railway station.
Wow, crikey. And when are we talking for this?
He was born 1847, and he came to St Albans in 1876.
Okay, so sort of Victorian highlight,
yes,
really.
Absolutely. And if you go down George Street today, you can see a blue plaque that has been erected in his memory.
Wow. Well, I can see why this caught your fascination. I really can do. So where did it go from here? You've been fascinated by this,
yes,
wonderful orchid nursery. But how did you go about researching all the rest of the wonderful commercial growing that has gone in around St Albans?
Well, luckily, we have a really good library. And I went to have a look, starting off with Sander's, looking at Kelly's directories, which give you lists of businesses in the town. And suddenly I started noticing all these other nurseries. So I started making a list, which got longer and longer and longer. And then I thought, well, what were all these people doing? I had no idea it was such a horticultural hub.
And do we know the reasons for that?
I don't think we're completely unique, but we are a place that had quite a lot of land, particularly if you think about that Victorian period when a lot of them started. So like Sander, he started in the centre of town and then moved out. But we also, as we do today, had really good transport links. So if you're going to have a gardening business and you want to transport your plants all over the country, we have the railway coming towards the end of the century, and then we've got quite good road collections as well. But also then in later years, we have the Horticultural College, which is now Oaklands College, right there, which meant that we had this expertise. So quite a few of the later stories in our exhibition will mention that the people who worked in those nurseries studied at Oaklands. And of course, we're not very far from Rothamsted, where they have agricultural, so farming research. But I think it was just once you start to get a critical mass of people as well, it makes people think, oh, I can do that. And so that they come along. And we definitely have a number of stories where somebody starts a nursery, and then when they come to the end of their career, for whatever reason, another person takes it on. So I think it was one of those, you sort of start with a small seed, to pardon the joke, sorry. And it just grows from there, because once there's a few, people come and do more of that.
Well, it certainly seems to be a real gem in St. Albans District's crown. It really does. You've highlighted something that I think that the district should be proud of. Now, you cover so many fascinating stories in the exhibition, and we can't cover them all here. But Maureen, I wondered if you had a favourite that you'd like to tell us about.
Yes, my favourite was the New Zealand nursery. I came across one of their adverts that said, the New Zealand nursery, Hatfield Road. And I thought, where on Hatfield Road? Because it's quite a long road. And it took me a long time to work out that they were actually where Loretto College is now.
Yeah, and Maureen, this was quite a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yes, their nursery was founded in 1797 by the Watson family, and they had growing grounds just off the London Road. Watson's Walk, we think, is called after them. They had growing grounds where Sander's nursery was at the camp, where the cemetery is on Hatfield Road, and also another one right out in Smallford. So they were massive growers.
Wow. And right back, as you say, starting in the 1700s. That's amazing. And what kind of things were they growing? Have we any idea?
They grew trees, they grew shrubs, you could buy bulbs from them, you could have your garden done, you could have your garden maintained. And the one thing I couldn't find out at all was, why was it called the New Zealand nursery?
Yes.
The Watson family, what has that got to do with New Zealand? And it was only when I found out when John Watson died and looked at his obituary in the Hearts Advertiser, he went twice to New Zealand in the 1850s.
I mean, it's a long way now, but yes, back then it was a really long way.
It must have been like going to the moon. And he went twice, and the second time he brought back lots of plants and seeds.
Yeah.
And he then called it the New Zealand nursery, remembering his travels.
Absolutely fascinating. And you've got businesses like this evidenced in things, haven't you? Tell us about some of the things that you've got showing, for instance, the New Zealand nursery.
Well, the New Zealand nursery, we couldn't find very much. We eventually ended up with a copy of a postcard showing one of their flower arrangements. And that is the only physical thing we have got of them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If you think about it, as a gardener, so much of what is produced in a garden centre or a nursery is ephemeral. It's going to biodegrade if it's a plant. If it's a seed packet, you might even stick them on a post in your garden and it's not going to survive. So there are objects in this exhibition and it's really lovely to have those, but a lot of stuff has gone missing. So there are a number where we only have a name or an advert. Lots of adverts is definitely one way. But for example, Frederick Sander has his amazing orchid catalogue. We've got some images from that. The catalogues themselves are in the Kew Garden archives, which are wonderful things. But we were very lucky that, for example, Aylett's were able to lend us some of the objects from the early days of their nursery. So we've got some of their dahlia buckets and a wonderful tool, which is apparently known as the plonker, because it plonks down into the ground and makes a hole the perfect size for a dahlia. So there are some of these wonderful tools that still exist, but it is a really interesting thing. I think a lot of people don't know that we had all these garden centres and nurseries, more nurseries, but that's because so much of it has just gone, or a new nursery has been built on top of an old one, and then you don't know what that original one was.
Well, which it just shows how hard your volunteers have worked unearthing all of these stories when there's so little physical left for them to go on. Now, another physical thing that you have in the exhibition is the Other Ryder Cup. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, when I went down to visit Adam Wigglesworth at Aylett's to speak to him about being part of the exhibition, I said to him, I've heard something about a Ryder Cup. And he went, oh yes, hold on a second. And he came back with this amazing silver cup, and I just sat there absolutely transfixed. And it was given by the Ryder family to the St Albans Horticultural Society, and when that ceased to be, it was given to be looked after by the Aylett family.
And so Samuel Ryder, he was somebody else who was growing in St Albans, wasn't he?
He certainly was, and he was the most extraordinary man, and he was so ahead of his time. He'd grown up in a very poor area outside Manchester, seen terrible poverty, and he was determined that he was not going to see poor people unable to look after themselves. So when he became a seedsman, he decided that he would try by having penny packets of seeds, not a shilling, not a pound, so that every man could start growing things, that you could get one of his catalogues sent to you, you could choose what you wanted, send it back, and within 2 days the seeds would arrive, so that even if you just had the smallest garden or little tiny allotment, you could start growing things.
Wow, that is a lovely thing that he did there, yes. Isn't it? It feels like he should be better known for that rather than
Absolutely.
What he's done for golf, doesn't
it? And I think he would be astonished to find out that we remember him for his hobby of golf.
Yes.
And we forget all the amazing things that he did as a horticulturalist and the most enlightened employer, who gave his employees sick pay when nobody else was doing that.
Another lovely story. Now, we can't actually see them, but St Albans has given its name to some varieties, hasn't it? Now, one of them is the St Albans grape.
Yes, so this was one of the topics tracked down. All of the research in this exhibition, the largest part of it, was done by our volunteers, because I'm only one person as a curator, so I set them all off. There's a grower called Robert Jostling, and in the 1840s, he develops and announces to the world that he has created the St Albans variety of grape, the St Albans vine, and advertises it everywhere, and it's picked up, and it's a really exciting story, a new variety of grape. And of course, we're talking about a grape growing in St Albans in the 1840s, 1850s, which is quite interesting. I think a lot of people think that that's relatively new, but actually you could, in certain circumstances and with the right tools and the right buildings, do that. What it turns out, and I'm not going to give all of the details of the story away so you can come and see the exhibition, but almost certainly his variety of grape was not a new one, unfortunately. And it may well have been a variety that either was already known and he discovered as well, or possibly he stole the idea of a variety and renamed it St Albans. So unfortunately, I don't think today we can lay claim to a St Albans grape, but for a bit of time there in the middle of the 1800s, there was indeed, you could have had a St Albans grape in your fruit bowl.
OK, so how about the St Albans cucumber? Is that a happier story?
Yeah, so that does seem to be a real variety. It was known as the Beauty of St Albans, and the records we can find sometimes refer to it as a cucumber and sometimes an encumber. I'd love to hear from any current horticulturists if there is in fact a difference between those two things. As far as I can discover, it's just an older word that's used to describe cucumber. What we haven't been able to do is track down any sign of it today again. Varieties come and go, of course. But yes, again, it's about the same period. It's this very flourishing period of gardening in St Albans. In about the sort of 1850s, there was indeed the Beauty of St Albans cucumber, which also inspired some of our volunteers to get creative.
It certainly did, didn't it? Now, for me, the crocheted cucumbers were a highlight. How did they come about?
Well, exactly as we've just been talking about, so many things being ephemeral and you don't have them. We don't have a St. Albans cucumber to put on display. And actually, even if we did, we tend not to put plants and fruit and vegetable on display in museums. So we were chatting about how we could represent them in the space. And as well as our amazing research volunteers, we have a whole set of volunteers who come in and do craft. And they've suggested that they could, along with our volunteer coordinator, make me some cucumbers and also some tomatoes. And they, over the past 6 months, they've been crocheting tomatoes, cucumbers. I think some of the cucumbers are made out of an old jumper from a charity shop, so there's some recycling going on in there as well. And they also cut out leaves from paper and did this amazing craft job so that when you come in, you get this illusion that you're walking into a greenhouse with the variety of St. Albans growing from the ceiling. It's quite interesting to me how you do commercial growing of tomatoes and cucumbers. Of course, we do have in St. Albans Glimwells who do grow fruit and veg like this on a really enormous scale. And the pictures of what they do is really fascinating to see them. But they often are these huge high greenhouses and these fruits and vegetables hanging down and cucumbers. If you want them to grow straight, you put them on a vine that goes across the top and therefore they can grow down and they can grow straight. So Wow. That's what we've copied in that craft.
So not only are they beautifully crafted, but they're also authentically hung as well.
Absolutely.
So, marvellous. That is great. So you've got the exhibition and there's a lot for us to enjoy there. You've also got a little activity that you want us to take part in. Do you want to tell us what you've been asking people to do?
We've been asking people to create their own plant or flower. So in exactly the mould of the St. Albans grape or the St. Albans cucumber or a flower. There are a number I know of St. Albans roses because of the association with the saint himself. We've been asking people to invent a new plant and draw us a picture or draw us the seed packet or the way that you would have advertised it. And there's some amazing ones coming out. We've had all sorts of polka dotted tomatoes, but then also some people who've really taken time and drawn us seed packets that have all the details. So that's been really lovely to see. We've also put a plea out that if anybody would like to add crocheted tomatoes to our tomato plants, we are very happy to accept additional tomatoes.
Well, it sounds like you've got some nice challenges for us there. I'd thoroughly recommend. I think there's so much in the exhibition. You must be very proud. So Maureen, Sarah, thank you so much for telling us about that today.
I was talking there to St. Albans Museum curator Sarah Keeling and volunteer Maureen Jones. Do go and take a look at the Growing City exhibition for yourself. It runs until the 31st of August. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.